right, we're back on Interview Radio on Lexington Community Radio. We just got done last hour talking to Todd Johnson of Glean, Kentucky, and learned a lot about how they move excess food from farms and grocers to
distribution centers.
All right, like, thank you.
Organizations that help feed people with food insecurity, like God's Pantry and places like that.
Thank you for the assist. Okay, sure. We're going to shift gears a little bit now. We've got on the line Mr. Ron Werner Wilson. He's the chair of the Family Sciences Department at UK. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing well. I was wondering if you could tell me about what the Family Sciences Department is responsible for.
Well, we have do a lot of things, practical living sorts of things. We have people here who teach about and do research on family finances, budgeting. We have folks who do help families in crisis. We have a marriage and family therapy program here in the department where we train students in the same way that over in the medical center they train physicians. They learn to be therapists here and work with folks. Students, faculty, staff, a lot of our work is in the community with people who come into the family center.
And, now we're coming off of Valentine's Day a little bit here. I wanted to sort of get into you a little bit about the kind of miscommunications and that are common within relationships. I mean, I'm sure you've talked to, thousands of couples?
Probably, yeah. I've talked to a few.
Quite a few. And and what are sort of the, what are some of the biggest issues that you've found when dealing with couples?
I think sometimes the biggest issue is I'm really aware of what you do that hurts the relationship. I seem to be a little bit less aware about what my contribution to hurting the relationship is. So oftentimes what I try to do is get folks to figure out how to look in the mirror and accept some accountability for what they do instead of just pointing the finger at it's my wife's fault or it's my husband's fault or it's the kid's fault. But what am I doing here? Because oftentimes that's where we start with. That's our posture, is to start with somebody else is messing things up in the relationship, and we have a hard time recognizing that we're probably contributing to that problem.
So you're saying that people aren't going, this isn't a habit that's developed, this is just sort of the human condition?
I think it probably is the human condition. We tend to, you can't open up a newspaper. I guess you don't open up newspapers anymore. You open up the internet to look at the news. Everybody, if something happens, it's always somebody else's fault. You took that quote out of context. So we seem to be raised in a culture of finding excuses. And part of it is because we're always asking, why did you do that? Well, if you ask me why I did something, I'll probably come up with an answer that may or may not be relevant. But we love to say to people, you as a group need to accept responsibility for your actions. But we have a real hard time in terms of this human condition, as you suggested. We have a real hard time looking in the mirror and saying, wow, I really messed up there.
Since it is so ingrained in the personality, how do you begin to retrain someone to, as you say, look in the mirror, take more accountability? I guess it extends beyond just a romantic relationship, but that's sort of the nexus point for a lot of that miscommunication, I guess.
Yeah, it's where a lot of this starts. We, if I'm on here, and part of it too is expectations. We put a lot of pressure, far more pressure on relationships these days than we did a century ago or even 50 years ago. My grandparents were married at 17 and 18, and I'm not sure they got married because they were in love. but nowadays, if I'm married, and I am married, my wife is supposed to be my soulmate, you know, in a heterosexual relationship, my wife or my partner, whoever my marital partner is supposed to be my soulmate. They're supposed to complete me. They're supposed to be able to anticipate my every need, and we're supposed to be in sync on every level.
Yeah, that's a lot of responsibility.
You know, that's just a lot of pressure there, and it's just not possible for any one person to do that. But, I mean, that's what our media says, you know, a relationship is supposed to do. And so then if my partner fails me, if we have an argument, well, clearly, you know, maybe they're not my soulmate after all. Maybe I need to go looking for that person who completes me, since this person doesn't get me. And relationships just take a lot of work. And so that was kind of a long response. I think in terms of how do you get people to look in the mirror and accept accountability, I think first you have to just be willing to do that. And you have to recognize that in any fight, you know, it takes two people to fight. It takes two people to argue. And so if I'm in an argument, if I'm upset with my partner, it's not just their fault. I have to just fundamentally recognize that I'm contributing to this problem.
So is that the problem? Is that the problem you see the most often? People just don't realize what their faults are? Maybe if they saw it, they would put some effort into fixing that?
I think that would go a long way. And oftentimes our partner has that really uncomfortable habit of pointing out things to us that we don't want to recognize in ourselves. So there's truth when they tell us. So I was working with a couple, and, you know, she kept telling him, you need to quit your job. Your job's making you miserable. And it's bad for our relationship. It's bad for the kids. It's bad for you. You're always in a sour mood. Quit that job. Mm-hmm. And he would say to her, well, you know, you need to lose 25 pounds. You're always complaining about, you know, the way you look. You hate that you can't wear the clothes that you used to wear.
So he's deflecting that criticism.
You know, so he's deflecting that, and so he's telling her, you need to lose 25 pounds. Well, they ended up getting a divorce. And, you know, I ran into each of them separately a couple of years later, and he had changed jobs.
Oh, my.
And she had lost 25 pounds. You know, so both of them had that uncanny ability to poke at the place that was vulnerable to the other person, but was also something that that was vulnerable because there was some truth there. He knew she was right. He knew he needed to quit his job and find something that wouldn't make him such a mean person. He wouldn't always be in such a bad job, but he wouldn't give her the satisfaction of knowing that. And, you know, despite the fact that she kept complaining about wanting to lose weight, she wasn't going to give him the satisfaction of being right. So we sabotage ourselves in these really weird and twisted ways because we don't want the other person to be right. I'd rather lose the battle, lose the war, than win the battle.
In some of the instances, and I'm assuming you talk to not just married couples, right, but maybe, people who are in the dating phase. When you see couples that are maybe thinking about getting married for whatever reason, you know, it could be a religious imperative. Sometimes, from what I understand, people get married just so they can get intimate. Just because it's like, I'm of a certain age,
It's
time to get married.
It's time to have
it
kids.
When you talk to younger couples about marriage, do they understand what a lifetime commitment really means?
I'm not sure that they always do, because, you know, at the end of the movie, it's all beautiful sunsets with clouds, and it's unusual for us to see, you know, there occasionally you'll see a movie that starts with where other movies end, and it's the challenge of being in a relationship. But I think you're right. To be an adult in this world, to be considered an adult, people expect you to be in a committed relationship, to be married. And then after you're married, you know, they expect you to have children. So we have these expectations. And so people just do it because it's the next step. Okay, I graduate from college. You know, so we're going to see all over town, we're going to see these billboards for, you know, come down to the Rupp Arena and come to the wedding fiasco or whatever they call it. And we're going to sell, you know, we're going to sell you flowers and we're going to sell you photos and we're going to try to sell you a caterer. And, you know, so it's we're going to sell you an event. We're going to sell you an experience that's going to cost you a lot of money. But we're not going to talk to you about what happens after that event. And so when I meet with couples and occasionally a really wise family will say to a couple, you know, instead of just going to your clergy member for the required two or three sessions, we'll pay for you to go into counseling and help you start out making sure that you have similar expectations about how to spend money, about children, about parenting. Because all of those are important things that you shouldn't wait until you have a kid to talk about the way you want to parent. You shouldn't wait until you're married to say, are you going to have joint accounts? Are you going to have separate accounts? Who's going to make those decisions? How are you going to spend your money? And there's some really good premarital programs that will walk couples through that. But fundamentally, why are you getting married? Are you getting married because it is the next step in this process and you happen to be in a relationship with this person? The best thing I can do for a couple sometimes is to help them not get married, to come to the conclusion, you know, I'm not ready for this. And I'm not anti-marriage. I am married. I've been married for over 20 years now. But you want to be married for the right reasons, and you want to be emotionally prepared for it. Because I got to tell you, having worked with a lot of couples who ended up leaving each other, that hurts. There is no fault-free divorce. It's a painful process.
What are the right reasons?
For getting married?
Yes.
Well, I think, you know, there's a fellow named John Gottman out in Oregon who spent decades following couples from when they first get married on. And what are the who are the couples that stay together and who are the couples that leave each other? And so he writes about the masters of marriage and the disasters of marriage. The masters of marriage are folks who are first off friends and have common goals, and you know, and we're not going to be able to match up on everything perfectly to be that soulmate thing. But it starts with the foundation of you're compatible. You enjoy doing things together. You know, if you both like to go bowling, or you both like movies, or you both you're both foodies, or you both like to go to RUP and root for the Cats. But you have some foundation. Those couples that stay together have a what he calls a relationship friendship.
Do you think that maybe friends are a little bit more honest with each other than people who are in a relationship together? Like they'll ask each other questions because they're not afraid of the answer.
Absolutely, your friends will tell you things that you don't want to hear. A good friend is not somebody who always agrees with you. If I have my buddy and we go and we get a beer and I start, you know, complaining about something, if I'm blowing this out of proportion, or I'm not being honest with myself, a really good friend will say, you know, Ron, I think I need to call BS on you here.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and a good friend will do that. They won't just say, oh man, you are such a victim. I can't believe that you stay, you know, at that job, or you stay in this relationship or whatever. But a good friend will be honest with you if they're a good friend.
And we're talking about expectations as related to the media, you know, never ending library of romantic movies, and you know, where they get together in the end despite, you know, having, you know, whatever kind of conflicts in the beginning. Is there an would you ever Let me see. How do I put this? Because this is a complicated topic. You know, I guess when I think about relationships, sometimes I like to use the analogy of like a house, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, if you don't have a a long-standing, you know, if you don't haven't built that foundation, then the rest of it's not going to stand up. Considering how people meet now, with this rise of like Tinder and all these other kind of dating type websites, do you think that is that going to create even more disaster in the long run because people are getting together so quickly without developing that relationship, that friendship, like you say?
You know, I think technology in some ways can really help us in relationships, in some ways it can get in the way. So if we're using technology for a hookup, it may meet, you know, and we're clear that it's just a hookup, and it's meeting that physical need, that's fine. But if you're going to use that as the basis for a relationship, that's no different than going to a bar and hooking up with somebody. You know, are you really going to be compatible? It takes some time to discover that. You know, sometimes dating sites, some of them that are done well, do a really nice job of screening and helping you get kind of through some of those hurdles. Are you compatible? Are you, you know, do you have similar kinds of approaches to finances and recreation? So if you're using a dating site technology and a dating site that's done well, it may actually help you. And Tinder's okay if all you need and all mm-hmm. the other person needs is a hookup and, you know, this is about physical gratification, great. But don't expect that that's going to help you find a life partner, a spouse, in any better a way or worse a way probably than, you know, going down to a bar and having a few drinks and meeting somebody there. It's pretty much a crapshoot.
We're talking to Ron Werner Wilson, say that three times fast, chair of Family Sciences Department at UK. For more information, you can go to familycenter.uky.edu. Do I have that right, Ron?
You do. And I did want to compliment you on your idea about the house metaphor. This fellow, John Gottman, that I mentioned earlier, actually visually uses what he calls the strong relationship house, and he uses kind of a pyramid. Similar to what you're talking about. And so he suggests that good relationships are built on exactly what you were describing, some kind of a foundation of compatibility and friendship and respect. I can disagree with you, but can I disagree with you in a way that's respectful, or am I going to do like Trump and threaten to punch you in the face if you disagree with me?
That is, you know, we're talking about, you know, what is, I suppose, the core of a lot of these issues, which is you, not me, quote unquote, you know what I mean? And do you, but I guess in the more like nuanced sort of sense, how do you see the sorts of issues that come up, I guess more specifically, between, you know, the engaged and the newlywed and the, you know, as they put in more and more time, do the issues change, or is it just the same thing that never goes away?
Well, yeah, sometimes it depends on the couple. Sometimes it's, they'll say, I should have seen this coming. You know, we've been arguing about this since we were dating. But there's a really funny, and maybe in an odd funny kind of way, phenomenon I've noticed that sometimes the attributes that initially attracts us to somebody may be the thing that starts to really irritate us over time. So if I, you know, I'm attracted to my partner and I say, well, and I'm really attracted because, you know, she's spontaneous and she's, you know, she's lively and she's vivacious and she's everything I'm not. And I just love, you know, that she brings me out of my shell and that we go do things. And, you know, and then after a while, though, that becomes exhausting. And so what was initially attracted us to this person, their spontaneity, is like, man, can't you just, do we always have to go out and go do something? Can't we just stay home tonight?
So when you're saying like, that's the old adage, opposites attract, right? Is that is that a good long-term strategy? Or are we saying that that's like sort of a fling kind of thing? Can you have, you know, a compliment to you, as it were, and it remain intact?
And this is where I think looking in the mirror is important. A complementary relationship works really, really, really well if you can recognize that you're different and respect that, as opposed to getting mad at the other person for being different from you, even though you knew they were different from you at the beginning. Because I'm going to make a much better decision. You know, I go, my wife and I have had to move and get mortgages on houses, and I just want to sign it, get the keys, and leave. And my wife will sit there, and I'll kind of roll my eyes sometimes, but she'll ask the attorney, what does this mean? Why am I signing this? And occasionally, you know, her asking those questions, you know, we've discovered some kind of a mistake in the contract. So because she's more methodical and she wants to know what she's signing, she's saved us some grief. But, you know, if I get come on, can we just leave? I want to go check out the house. I think there's room for both. And as long as I can respect her and recognize that what she's different from me, but what she brings strengthens our relationship. And sometimes you do just have to make a decision. You know, so what I bring to the relationship is, okay, we've talked this to death. Now we need to decide.
That is sort of the bottom line, right? That big R word, respect.
Right. It is absolutely the biggest word.
We've got another big R word here. Ron Werner Wilson is joining us. He's the chair of the Family Sciences Department at UK. UK, obviously, many, many students, lots of undergrads. Do the younger people, do they come in and talk as well?
You know, we do. We get a fair number of students who, you know, they'll have stress in class or something, and their teachers know that we exist, and may say, I mean, maybe you could help, it would help you to go talk to somebody. You know, particularly, if students confide in their instructors, their professors, and, you know, I'm having trouble at home, or I'm having trouble with a girlfriend, or I'm having trouble with a boyfriend, and they might, you know, recommend, well, you know, I think maybe it would help you if you had somebody that you could go use as a sounding board to kind of think this through. They're not going to tell you what to do, but they'll help you clarify for yourself where are the blocks for you. And I'm surprised by, you know, I'm 50. When I was their age, I would have been really reluctant to go talk to somebody. It would have been a sign of weakness, especially as a male, you know, that we were supposed to just suck it up and be stoic about it. But there's I think this generation is a lot wiser than I was when I was 19 or 20 years old. And they do see that there's some value in going and talking to somebody and kind of talking, you know, let me see what I say so I know what I think kinds of things.
Do you think that that's, an answer or a reverberation from the incredibly high divorce rates? You know, this sort of, you know, I don't want this going on in my life, so let me see, you know, what I can do differently.
You know, I hear that a lot. You know, I love my parents, but I don't want to recreate the relationship they had. I want to be more intentional about my relationship. I want to do a better job in my relationship. And so we love to talk about how selfish and self-centered and entitled these millennials are, and when we say the word millennial, you can just hear
the
disrespect. It's just dripping from our voice, right? Yeah, it is. You know, that we're condescending to these people, but they're very, actually a very wise group, and I think they want to learn from those mistakes. Say, okay, this is what my parents did. They probably did get married for the wrong reasons. They got married a lot younger. You know, kids are getting married older. The average age of marriage now is mid-20s or older. And it used to be, you know, teens and early 20s. So I think they're wanting to be better prepared financially, emotionally, and to make some better decisions than I think, it's unusual. My brother was married. You know, he's a little older than me. He was married when he was 18. He's still married, you know, 25, 30 years now. But, you know, when I look at our friends, it's relatively unusual to be married to the same person for that length of time.
So, Ron, tell me, who's at fault more, men or women?
Yeah, well, let's throw that blame game around.
Yeah. I mean, it's the three guys. It's not fair. Lex isn't here today.
I will tell you that, again, I really respect the work of this researcher, John Gottman. Mm-hmm. One of the things that predicts relationships that stay together and are happy, because there are people that will stay married but not be happy.
Right.
Is his data suggests it's if men can accept influence from their wives, so in heterosexual relationships. So he doesn't have data about same-sex relationships. So I don't maybe lesbian couples are better than gay couples or heterosexual couples. He doesn't have comparative data, but what he has in this longitudinal data is that. And my wife and I were doing co-therapy with a couple one time, and they brought in the news, the headline from the newspaper, which said, men need to do what their wives say. And she was kind of gloating about this, and he was like, what is this crap? Right? Do what my wife says. And they kind of, the headline misrepresented what John was trying to say, which was accepting influence is the same as always doing what your partner says. But guys were trained to win the war, so win at all costs, do you want to be, and so I think that's how we're trained, is to be combative and adversarial, and it's weak. You're weak if you accept influence from your wife. But what his data suggests is if I can say, maybe my wife is making a reasonable suggestion here. Maybe she's not. Maybe she's full of stuff.
Yeah.
But if I can at least entertain the possibility that she has good ideas and she can help me. That's his response to your question. Is it really is something that men have worked very, very hard at, is not seeing a disagreement or a difference of opinion as an opportunity to argue and win the argument.
Right.
But as men, there's something about either the way we're hardwired or socialized. Can we just try to put that aside and listen to our wives and say, yeah, I think I hear what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to the chair of Family Sciences Department at UK, Mr. Ron Werner Wilson. Ron, not to turn this into Dear Abby, but one of our hundreds of thousands of listeners has sent me in a question to ask you. How long into a relationship should until you know if it's worth exploring further or not?
That's a great question. I think some of it is intuition, which is kind of a fuzzy word, right? But our gut instinct. How do you know to when to make, you need to change your job or you need to do something. And sometimes you just have to, it felt right. I made that, it felt right. So intuition, gut instinct. But you have to be careful that it really is a gut instinct and not something like loneliness, or desperation. So sometimes, I've worked with people who, and the story was, I got into that relationship because I didn't think anybody else would have me. And then the relationship is destructive or abusive. Right. So you need to make sure that the voice you're listening to is that intuition is really, your gut instinct is there, and not being clouded by, I guess nobody else is going to have me.
Or someone's going to fix me.
Or somebody's going to fix me. Yeah, exactly.
Or you're going to fix somebody else.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the message women get is, you can change this guy. He's a jerk now, but he'll settle down once you're married. You'll straighten him out. That's really a setup for everybody. Because if the guy's a jerk now, he's probably going to be a jerk once you say I do.
Yeah, I don't care how many Channing Tatum movies say otherwise.
That's exactly right.
we're on Lexington Community Radio with Ron Werner Wilson. He's the chair of the Family Sciences Department at UK. It's not just for students, faculty, and staff, although they're also welcome. Anyone from the community can come in. It's a training center, akin to a doctoral residency. Is that how you put it, Ron?
Exactly. That's exactly right.
You can get more information at familycenter.uky.edu. We want to thank you for your time today, Ron. It's really been enlightening.
Oh, happy to do it. I'll come on anytime you want me.
That's fantastic. Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Bye-bye.
We're back. This is Interview Radio on Lexington Community Radio. We're nearing the end of the show, but it was a good one, Ben.
Yeah, I think so, too. So we learned about the glean people.
Gleaning, yeah.
And food insecurity.
Lots of new vocab words.
I knew it was bad. I did not know we got rid of 40% of the food in that we put on the shelves in this country. That's amazing.
Yeah. Thankfully, though, you know, like, if we can put a robot on Mars, right, we can fix these simple sort of supply and demand stuff when it comes to whether or not to fill a landfill, you know. And, and thankfully, Todd came in here and he's coordinating that one bushel of kohlrabi at a time.
And they were, let's see, their number is 859-444-4769 if you want to get involved. And was it gleanky.org?
That's the one.
All right.
And then if you were listening, which we know you were.
Of course.
We just got off the line with Ron Werner Wilson. He's the chair of the Family Sciences Department at UK. Their website is, hang on, familycenter.uky.edu if you want to go in and get some marriage counseling.
And that's not just for students either. That's
it's not just for
the general public.
It's not just for students.
All right.
Yeah. We missed Lex.
We did.
You know, I like having that female perspective in here.
Yeah. We might need to have him back on with Lexington and us. It was an all-male discussion, three-person discussion about relationships. We definitely need her back on.
A lot of testosterone in here today. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, during the breaks, we've just been throwing chicken wings around.
Yeah, yeah. Wasting food, which we've learned not to do.
Oh. Damn it, Ben.
Did I ruin the rest of your bit?
Well, I think that's going to do it for us this week, folks. We'll be back next week with, you know what? Next week, we're going to start trying to take phone calls again. I know that you all are out there. You're just shy. We'll be back next week. Have a good one, Lexington.
See ya.